On this week's show, we're going to be looking ahead to the Australian Grand Prix, covering all the storylines to look forward into the weekend, and of course, making our predictions. Let's go. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Back of the Grid. I'm your host this week, Tom, and I'm joined by Chris.
Hello, I'm ill. I'm sorry I sound like this.
I mean, technically you sound slightly better despite being ill, thanks to your new microphone.
Yeah, did your old microphone have like the ill filter on it all the time? You never worked out how to turn it off.
Turns out I sound exactly the same.
Yeah. That other voice you heard is the one and only Stu.
Oh, hello. The one and only. There's only one.
Chesney Hawks. Is that Chesney Hawks?
Yeah. Oh, God. Okay, come on. Let's make a podcast.
We already know going into this. This is one of those weeks. Yeah, so this is going to be like a pint-sized version of Back of the Grid this week, I think. We're going to run through some storylines going into the weekend, heading into Australia. So some things that have maybe of interest, like tyres, obviously.
Oh, tyres, great.
Among other things this weekend.
You're wasting internet, Tom. We're talking about tyres, we're wasting internet.
We're always wasting internet, friend. You know that. We'll make our predictions, like I said, and we've got a couple of bits of inbox. So, I mean, which of the many storylines that we actually do have would you guys like to touch on first?
I think let's start at the top. Start at the top of the list, then work our way down it, just for simplicity, ease of use.
Okay, so the probably the main one is we're expecting science back, but as of right now, we've not had confirmation of that.
They keep using words like expected and probably, but they're being non-committal. But he's there. He's doing media stuff. So I think odds are pretty high he's going to be back in the car.
Yeah, I think he'll be back.
I'd have thought so. Did he end up having an appendectomy?
He did.
Okay. It's like keyhole these days, though, isn't it, compared to once upon a time?
It's not like it's not like when I had it not done. But if you listen to last week's episode again if you want to know about my appendix experience as a four-year-old.
Or was it in the post show in Discord?
No, just in like full show.
It was just in the show. One of their weird attendants. Yeah. But yeah, given the album was back in a car like 6 days after he had his done, I think science will be fine.
Yeah. So I'm not really going to get into detail about the alternatives. I mean, if the worst were to happen and Sainz couldn't drive this weekend, it will most likely be Behrmann that replaces him. I mean, Schwartzman's on the list, Giovinazzi are on the list. They're kind of back up.
It would be
Behrmann, realistically.
Because it was only Behrmann at the last race because Schwartzman and Giovinazzi were doing... Sebring 12 hours, I think they were at last weekend. Yeah. But yeah, tell they if they're all been, available this weekend.
They must have been gutted.
I know, right? Yeah. But, sit around all this time.
Florida.
And I could have just been driving a Formula 1 car. Ferrari garage doing nothing, and then the one time they're actually needed.
Yeah.
I wonder how many eyes will be on F2 this weekend if Behrmann isn't the place in science. Like, with just anticipation of, okay, so we've seen what he can actually do in F1. Like, let's go study F2 a little closer now. Like, I'd be interested to know like how many people are suddenly a bit more interested in F2 after that experience.
Oh, I bet they will.
Last time out.
Especially
they've picked
the
a good year. Yeah, they've picked a good year to get into it if they are getting into it this year, because it does look like should be a good season.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's a... ironically, he's got way more points in F1 than he has in F2 yet, right?
Yeah.
He would have done pretty well, I think, last weekend if he'd done the F2 race. He would have got some decent points, probably. But I mean,
anything can happen, I suppose.
But yeah, he was on pole, so he had a good measure of that track, which I think probably helped him a lot in the Formula One race as well.
I think, as a side note, I think that's quite cruel that he's on 0 points, because you get 2 points for pole position in F2, but because he withdrew, he was withdrawn from the event, so he didn't get to keep his 2 points for pole,
that's
which
a
is
shame, isn't it?
Like, he was there, he did it. Surely he should get to keep his couple of points.
That's outrageous. Yeah. I mean the way they apply some of these rules across
bizarre,
motorsport is just strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway. Well,
I mean, it is going to be a shame, especially if it comes down to like those couple of points at the end of the season, and or maybe the handful more he would have got from the races as well. Like if it comes down to that and he maybe doesn't quite make a title because of it.
I mean, it would be peak Ferrari if that happened to him, wouldn't it?
Although, having said that, in the opposite side, the performance in the Ferrari and the points he gained in the Ferrari are probably a heck of a lot more valuable to him than the points he would have gained in an F2 car.
Yeah, if you offered him
himself in that shop window, I think.
If before the season you offered him, you only finish second in F2, but you get your F1 debut, I think he'd have snapped your hand off.
He's probably got enough points to not finish last in the Formula 1 season.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, there is that. I'd not even thought about that yet. Jeez. Right. What else have we got on the list? The gap. Now, this is another change in circuit compared to where we've been before. How do we feel about the Red Bull gap?
I mean, it's a lot of there's a lot of slow speed on this circuit, which obviously is going to suit some cars more than others. I imagine Aston Martin will probably be. Then again, the Aston Martin doesn't seem as good in slow speed this year as it did last year, does it? Because they were right up there in Australia last year.
Do you remember, was it the Astons that did, however, have really good traction out of slow speed in the first couple of races, like Bahrain?
Yeah, they're still not bad there. Because, now they've reprofiled Albert Park, it probably is a bit closer to a Bahrain-style circuit where it's low speed and medium speed.
There is some pretty big high speed stuff in there as well.
Yeah, I guess that new section's pretty high speed as well.
Sector's really fast now, I would say.
Do you know what? I really hated this new layout when they first announced it.
I love it.
Then they raced there and I was like, oh, actually, I'll take it all back. I've nailed it. This is great.
It's way better, way, way better. Let them get some speed up. Let them, the point of a Formula One car is fast corners. You want really fast corners that show what a Formula One car can do. That's why Maggots, Becketts, Cops, all that at Silverstone are just brilliant places to watch Formula One cars. So
I was just worried they were killing overtaking opportunities, but last year that didn't seem to be the case. So
I think the biggest improvement that I'm looking forward to seeing again this year is probably, I want to say it's turn 9 that used to be a chicane and is now one of the more sweeping S's.
Yes.
At the
9 and 10.
Yeah, is that at the end of, like around the back of the lake?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a really good section.
It used to be what was generally a fairly clumsy right-left chicane because it wasn't really good enough to make an actual move on, and the move tended to get made with who was fastest on the throttle coming out of the left-hander and going down that like slightly curved back. I want to call it a back straight, but it's not a back straight, is it? Because it's curved. But it was about who was fastest out of the corner rather than being able to make a move going into it. So that's probably like the peak of the upgrades for me.
Yeah, I mean,
section that's changed.
Again, looking at that sort of section of track, the Red Bull's just going to be unbelievable through there, isn't it?
It's going to be almighty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, there's plenty of other corners where, people will be able to keep up with them. It's just, obviously Red Bull are going to run away with this, I think. I think it's, based on the last two tracks, I can't see a world where, I think they might be kept honest in qualifying. I think it's possible that they might not even be on pole. But I think race pace-wise, they're so much kinder on their tyres than all the other cars. That it's just going to make such a difference. So.
And that's kind of scary in the sense that teams like Ferrari have made such steps forward in that area that Red Bull have also made the same steps and just gone even further into being able to manage the tyres more effectively, which is just crazy.
I think if Red Bull are going to be beaten, it's going to be because this track really punishes mistakes and safety cars and red flags are pretty common. So I think something like that could cause them to slip up or could cause, maybe they get unlucky with safety car time and something like that. But I think it's going to take something like that, which this is the kind of circuit it can happen at.
Yeah, lots of walls to be made contact with.
But then lots of runoff in terms of like grass runoff and stuff, gravel traps, that kind of thing.
I think you've got the... I always find with Albert Park that there's like the sort of just the right balance of all those aspects. Like there are corners with grass or gravel runoff that mean you are going to seriously struggle if you bin it in one of those corners.
Yeah.
There's exits that are very close to walls. And if you cock up that exit, you are damaging the car on the wall. But then there's also areas with a little bit more lenience where you can kind of run a bit wide and get wheel to wheel and, you know, jostle each other around. Like it's always been kind of high. It's a bit like Montreal in that regard. Like there's one, why would that circuit like is always up there for me is one of my favorites, because there is just that nice mix of there's bits that have got real jeopardy, but then there's other bits that are a little bit more forgiving and you can kind of take a bit more of a risk, and you rather than just being constant walls like Monaco or constant runoff like a lot of circuits now, this has kind of got one of the few that's still that's got the balance in between the two.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think as well, it's one of the more, it's probably the prettiest race of the season, I think, in terms of like you know, scenery wise around the track and around the circuit and looking at, you know, across at the city skyline and stuff.
What
it looks really pretty. And the time of day that they run the race as well is like golden hour, starting to set. And so towards the end of the race, all the cars just look amazing on a sunny day. They just look so nice. It's great.
So what we're saying with Montreal and Albert Park, what we need is just races round public parks that surround lakes. Yeah.
Battersea Park. Get them to Battersea Park.
No.
The locals will love it.
I'm going to move us on to something else.
Just as last point, I'm really glad Australia is going to go back to being the season opener. Not
for
permanently,
me, this is,
but
this race coming up now is the season opener for me. This is the real start of the Formula
this
One
is
season.
It. This is the real one.
There are exhibition races before. We're starting properly now.
I mean, if only. right, moving on to another team, Mercedes. Do we think that this circuit's going to punish them? And do we think they've been able to do anything at all between being in the Middle East and now being here to improve that situation?
Yeah, I think yes to both. I think
okay.
9 and 10, they're going to be looking at 9 and 10 and going, don't like look at that. But I think they've said they're going to do some they've got some experiments lined up to do with their cars, some setup changes and things to see how they if there's anything they can do to identify where this lack of correlation they've got is occurring compared to sort of their models in the wind tunnel and things. But there are steps you can take to. I think it's going to be a research project for them a lot of this race weekend. I think it's particularly through practice, you're going to see them in and out of the pits a lot, make lots of setup changes, and just seeing what they can do to try and iron out these bugs they've got with high speed corners. But you know, if any team can do it, we've seen them do it before, and if they can do it, you know, that car is quick everywhere else. We saw that last race. That car is quick in low and medium speed. They just need to get high speed corners licked. And if they can do that, then, you know, they should be more or less in the mix with Ferrari, maybe even a little bit quicker, maybe slightly slower, but they'll be around. And then, you know, if those two teams can then develop in tandem at the same time, not in tandem, obviously, but if they can then start to reel in Red Bull without too much conflict among those two teams themselves, then we might be in for a bit of a decent season, might salvage a decent season out of what is at the moment looking like a bit of a Verstappen whitewash.
Love that we're saying that in two races.
It
does at the minute. It's hard to argue with it, to be fair.
But you're right. Like if you looked at the Hamilton's onboards when he was behind Norris in Saudi Arabia, like Hamilton would be right behind him until they got sort of past the first couple of corners, and then Norris just disappeared. And then over the rest of the lap, Hamilton would reel him back in again and be behind him for the start finish straight, and then he just disappeared again. Like, it's not fundamentally a bad car, I don't think. It's just this high speed issue that, and it is a correlation thing. Like, something in their wind tunnel, their CFD has told them one thing, and the real car is doing a different thing.
That middle sector around the top of the lake is going to be really difficult for them.
Oh, it's going to be brutal
for
them.
But
9-10 is going to be...
Yeah, well, I mean, all that bit that's got reprofiled, you've got the chicane before 9 and 10 that got reprofiled that was like 6, 7, and 8. That's a lot faster than it used to be, isn't it? Like, it's not high speed, but I think...
Well, they might be all right through there.
From there all the way down to turn 13 where you've got the next, like, real... braking zone, isn't it? Like that whole sector from 7 to 13 is like on it. So,
yeah.
But you know what? In the position Mercedes are in right now, it's probably a good thing that they're going to another track that's got some corners that are going to show up their problems, because at least they can work on fixing them for the rest of the year. Like,
yeah, that's it. Like they can use those corners to identify how those weaknesses are occurring, and then hopefully, you know, put efforts into solving them.
Are we going for any bingo squares of Flovis on the Mercedes during FP session?
Definitely. Oh, 100%. It'll be slaved. But they've got the... Did you know Mercedes have a special Flovis that's supposedly invisible? You can see it, but like it's a lot harder to see.
Like
it's like a UV.
White.
Yeah, you have to use a UV light on it to see it.
Yeah.
Make of that what you will. Next.
Interesting as well, I think, on Mercedes' kind of struggles. I think they're sort of, it seems like they know that they are, they've had a bit of brain drain in recent years, and it seems like they're trying to turn that around. Like their recent hires have all been on the techie side. Like they've just announced that Simone Resta is going to be joining them as development director. So he was at Ferrari since like 2001, and then he was kind of loaned out to Sauber and then Haas in recent years. And he actually used to work with James Allison at Ferrari when James Allison was there for a couple of times as well. So that's a pretty decent hire for them. They've also got the guy who was head of Ferrari's simulator team to be there. What was it? Head of performance software applications.
I think that's like the more interesting hire for me.
Yeah.
Because like that's clearly like, if there's correlation issues with the wind tunnel and reality, then, you know, that's the person whose job it's going to be to sort of try and minimize. You can't yet create perfect simulation of how fluid dynamics work in the real world in the digital environment yet. You will be able to eventually, but we're a long way off it now. And they need someone who can get them closer to that, like that, you know, those little millionth factors closer to being a better performance environment virtually, so that they can replicate it slightly better in the real world and hopefully get better results.
Yeah. Moving on, our first race of the season that has some hometown drivers. You've got obviously Piastri, but also Ricciardo. Piastri's had a decent enough start to the season, probably a very good opportunity to pull some decent points in front of a home crowd. Ricciardo, on the other hand, not had such a great start, especially when you compare him to Tsunoda. Maybe the home crowd can help him get a good, you know, get the season off the ground.
Thoughts maybe they'll help his pit crew not give him a really delayed stop.
There's that. Yeah. We always say the hometown is worth like, what is it, 5/10? A
couple of tenths. I think Ricciardo, obviously, it would have been nice. I don't feel like Ricciardo's quite hit the ground running the way he might have hoped that he was going to at the start of this season. But this, you know, home race early in the season, it's an opportunity for him to have a bit of a reset and just, you know, hopefully have a good result and then use that to build his confidence and ride it into the opening races of the season. The other opening races of the 24 race season.
I've just seen Jose in Discord chat basically going along with my predictions methodologies and saying, hometown drivers, don't you mean the first two DNFs?
Savage.
I did see a list recently of Ricciardo's home race results, and it's not pretty reading.
I remember it was his first race at Renault, I think, and he got a little bit out in the grass coming down the start finish straight, and he basically didn't make it past the pit exit because a lump in the grass or something caused him to bounce, and it just took the front wing out underneath.
It was where the grass turned to. There was a concrete strip that ran into the pits for one of the gates into bounced. The pit, and it bounced off of it. That was kind of hairy. It was amazing that he didn't take out half the field, like when he got to turn one, because somehow managed to make it through without taking anyone out. I think I can't really remember.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, I'm pretty sure it was just a self.
Yeah, I think it was
cell phone.
Yeah.
I think honestly, I think Piastri might be an outside bet for a podium. Like,
I
can see the McLaren being all right at this track. He already seems a lot more on Norris's race pace, and probably better in qualifying in the two races this year. I think he certainly outqualified him in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah,
I think he may have been around Bahrain.
He's on that.
Yeah, I mean, that'd obviously be awesome to see, but I can see McLaren being well up there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And then one of the last key ones, can anyone in Formula 1.5, as it will start to become known soon, manage to claw their way into the points?
Yeah, so we're talking this top five, bottom five, don't we? Like,
yeah, two races in, we're definitely getting a bit of a, these five teams are the ones that are shoo-ins for points. These five teams are looking for scraps of anything that happens higher.
So we're talking Haas, Williams, Sauber,
RB,
and Alpine.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Of course. Well, I don't see Alpine getting any points this week.
That one's a given, I think. Yeah. We all knew Alpine was the best.
I mean, that's why what Haas did last race to get that one point could be like vital come the end of the season, because I really think those five teams are going to struggle to get them.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I think Sauber and Williams have had the moments where they've looked closest to being able to challenge their way into that top 10. With all this being like flyaways and only a 2 week break in between, I can't see like anyone just making instant leaps. So I think the general running order that we've seen over the first couple of races is pretty much going to be maintained at the minute. I don't think we'll see much of a shift in that until it's May time, isn't it? When we end up back here in Europe.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think another month or so. Everyone's still getting to know their cars.
Yeah, for sure.
It could be that one or two teams find sort of setup changes and things and find something in their setup that they can improve. But I don't think it's going to make anyone leap out of the bottom five into the top five. I think it's more, it could shuffle the order, just like the order in the top five is kind of like, you know, behind Ferrari, McLaren, Mercedes, Aston. You feel like any of that could go. Any other than Ferrari, you know, Ferrari, Mercedes, Aston fight could go any which way at any particular point, but the Ferrari feel pretty nailed on for P2 at the moment, and Red Bull are obviously categorically nailed on for P1. So, I think the interesting is the dynamic of each five rather than like who's going to jump out of one five into another five kind of thing.
It tends to be a pretty chaotic race here. There have been a lot of chaotic races. So I think this is definitely an opportunity for a lot of teams to steal a result.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
And then aforementioned and promised tyre talk. This was
you just got to love it. You got to love a bit of tyre talk.
Everyone's here for it. They're here for it. But this was the first race of the season using the softest compound available for the season, which is the C5. In the past, we've not had much tyre strategy here. It's been pretty much a dull one-stop race for everyone in that regard. I think the aim of
when there isn't a safety car, but there will be safety cars.
Of course, yeah. Standard strategy here is usually one-stop. So I think Pirelli are probably trying to instigate a little bit more strategy by bringing these softer compounds than usual.
I think it's
interesting to see how that plays out.
Potentially makes a two-stopper a viable choice, I think.
I think that's how it should be, right? There should be nothing between really a two-stop and a one-stop, or should be very a negligible enough amount between a one-stop and a two-stop to warrant, you know, someone having a go at having the two-stop and seeing what they can do. And it gives the drivers options of, like, you know, it's to do with driver comfort, how comfortable they are on a particular set of tyres, all that kind of thing. If they, you know, and it makes the driver more of a factor because the driver can say, well, I feel like I'm faster on this tire than other cars are on this tire.
Yeah.
So I can have an it can have an impact on my race. So I think the more they do to open up strategy, especially given that it is mandatory to run two types of tire, I mean, if they can make it as dynamic as possible, then why not? I'm open to, you know,
yeah.
If it was me, I'd bring the softest compounds to every single race. But I don't think that I get as many fans. So.
Anything else anyone wants to add to storylines before we move on?
I think that's it.
I don't think so.
Cool.
I'm looking forward to this one. I always enjoy this one.
I do always enjoy his visit. Yeah.
You're getting up for it? Going to get up?
We'll see how much I recover from this illness by the weekend.
Not looking forward to it that much.
it really depends on a few factors, that, for me.
I'm hoping I'll be feeling right as rain and I'll be very much up for it, but we'll see.
Admittedly, that was one benefit to the Saturday races, where it didn't matter what I went and did on a Saturday night, I didn't have to get up to watch a race.
Yeah.
So Sunday was an easy day.
I think I'll probably watch it at the normal time, just on F1 TV. I'll just catch it myself rather than try and watch it live. I think, you know, part of like the beauty of F1 TV these days, not to like, you know, plug them or give them free advertising or anything, but it is nice to be able to just open up your app, watch the race at your leisure.
Watch at your leisure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think even just any sports app like that, like I was American sports, and to be able to open an app that doesn't ruin the score for you, doesn't plaster what's happened all over the front pages, and then just go, I would like the full version, please start from the beginning as though it's happening live to me, or I'd like the 30-minute abridged version, please. And then you just like, you've got those options if you do need to catch it later in the day for some reason. I think that's a really positive thing. It's just a shame that there's so many territories locked out of F1 TV.
Yeah.
Like, races like this, it's like, I'm going to get up, I'm not going to look at my phone, I'm going to watch the race straight away, and then I'm going to go about my day and I can just do things and not worry about someone texting me or
everything I say in the group. I'll use code so that you don't understand what I'm saying, but
I'll just mute the group, mate. I'll just mute them.
Fair. Right, I'm going to move on to predictions. So we're going to go through the predictions stuff that we normally do here. If you are new, head to the website at backofthegrid.com and all the rules and information will be explained. You can also sign up there to join in. Very much worth doing, because if you score a perfect 5 out of 5 any weekend, you are in eligible for a prize, which we've already had a couple of those already this season. So,
yeah. Terrifyingly.
Yeah. Terrifyingly. We're going to go through, we're going to predict fastest in Q3, the winner of the race, the first DNF, the number of finishers, and then random drivers finishing position for this week. So I'm going to just go very broad with this, like I think I did last time. Fastest qualifier and winner. Does anyone have anything to contribute other than a double Verstappen?
I think qualifying is interesting. I don't think it's as clear cut as
it's really not.
I think it's the sensible prediction for me is Leclerc qualifying and then Verstappen win.
Okay.
I think that's what I'm going to do.
Any advance on that from you, Chris?
I'll say a Sainz fastest in Q3 just to be different. But I do think it's going to be very close between Red Bull and Ferrari.
And I've tried that a couple of times already and it's failed, mate. So I am going for a safe old Verstappen double.
I think Verstappen's scraped pole both times. He's definitely fallible in qualifying this year, it seems.
There was a point in some of the qualifying sessions. Now, yes, I know before the keyboards start hammering away, Q3 ended up being faster, but there was a Q1 session at the start of the season where like everyone was basically within a second of each other by the end of that session. And don't get me wrong, the Red Bulls, the Ferraris turned the wick up a bit and went like another 8/10 faster or whatever it was. But to have a Q1 session where Alpine are in within 1 second of the teams at the front, like, qualifying's pretty close this year.
Yeah, despite, it only takes a couple of mistakes.
Despite the crappy race pace for a lot of teams, like there's something to be played for in qualifying. But
this is the insane thing about I don't know if you've seen this last week. There's been another interview with James Vowles when he was talking about kind of what Williams were like, well, what they're kind of like now after he sort of inherited them. And how, you know, they were literally using an Excel spreadsheet to track the parts list. And there were moments where, like, people didn't even know where in the factory certain parts were, and people were, like, scrabbling around trying to find them because they weren't tracked properly.
It's like dad's garage, isn't it? Like,
yeah, and they literally had a car just ready in time for testing. And that car is within, I mean, in qualifying, the Williams was within, what, a second and a half of the Red Bull?
It's mental, isn't it?
The margins to go from scrabbling around trying to find parts off an Excel sheet versus one of the slickest operations that's ever existed in the sport, and the difference there is like a second and a bit.
Yeah.
It's mad. Wild. Mad. Absolutely wild.
So who's first DNF?
I'm going to not go with the obvious choose on the Australian drivers. I'm gonna say Magnussen.
Okay. So I'm not going to go for my usual home driver or home team situation, so I'm not saying anything like that. I am, however, going with a driver who was pretty much part of one of the first DNFs, if not the first DNF last year, and that's Ocon. Because if you remember, those two came together.
That was
coming out of turn two, didn't they?
Yeah.
But I honestly can see something like that happening again, or just the car being utter rubbish, one or the other.
Ocon does love going side by side through tight corners on a street circuit.
Yeah.
Now then. I think the Haases are a little bit too fast to be first DNF. I think the Saubers keep their noses clean for the most part, or have been so far. Alpine definitely could be some argy-bargy. RB for sure could be some argy-bargy.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Tsunoda.
Okay. Tsunoda for Chris. Number of finishes. I'll Stu. Open... sorry, Stu. Yeah, sorry. I apologize. It's been eight years. I should know by now which one. It's also been a long day as well for everyone. true that. Number of finishers. I want to open the bidding here with a 16. I did want to go a bit higher than this originally, but I think there's some tight sections with walls either side that I think might claim a victim or two over this weekend. So I'm going 16 here.
Do you remember how many it was last year?
Number of finishes.
14 in the end.
Yeah, 12. It was pretty 12. Low. Yeah, it was crazy low.
I mean, it's not going to... That's
not going to be that bad.
I don't think we're going to get the levels, the levels of chaos we did last year. I mean,
it is a race of attrition, though.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 17.
Okay.
I'll go the other side then and say 15.
Interesting.
Okay.
Like it. And our random driver for this week has been drawn as the one and only Mr. Lando Norris. Any bids to open this one up?
Sixth.
That's interesting. That's exactly where I have him too. And for context, I've already submitted mine into the website.
That's good.
That is also exactly where he finished last year.
Wasn't even premeditated on that basis. I just kind of had a feeling.
In fact, I'll tell you what, Tom, since you've got sixth, I'm going to go seventh instead.
Are you sure?
Yeah, since you've already got sixth, I'll change to seventh.
Well, I was going to go the other way and say fifth.
There we go then. Lovely. This has gone
really nice. Works quite well.
It works out beautifully.
Brilliant. So, as I mentioned there, you can submit your predictions through the website. So head to backofthegrid.com. There's also information there on how to join our fantasy league. So we're currently running one through Grid Rival and one through the official F1 fantasy game. So the codes to join are there, the links to join are there. Get involved with those as well, because we do recap like best of each league and who's leading throughout the season. Opportunity for shout out if you're doing well there. Right.
And also, not forget, being Australia, everything's happening earlier than usual, so make sure you get your predictions in.
Unless you're Australian. And then technically it just happens do them at a regular leisure. Time. Right, inbox, gentlemen.
Keep me saying now.
Stay out.
Box.
Hey, man.
I'll take the first one. Charlotte Taylor says, as a Lewis fan, Should I be concerned about his form? The last couple of races last season and the beginning of this season have been difficult for him. Is he going down the Seb Vettel route of mistakes creeping into his racing, or is he just lacking confidence in the car?
I think Lewis Hamilton has spent so much time racing for wins. I feel like he starts to lose interest a bit when he's not in that position. I feel like for many, many years, we've seen Lewis Hamilton at 100% and he's incredible. The last couple of years, I think we've maybe seen him at like 80 or 90%. Like he's never really...
80?
Maybe that's a little too low, but like I don't think he really switches it on and gives it everything when he's racing for fifth place, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, on that note, I would say that there is a slight comparison to make to Seb in that regard. Like Seb at Red Bull was focused, determined, like on it. There was a time where Seb at like Ferrari had clearly just lost interest in, like, knew that team couldn't give him what he was after.
Yeah.
And was looking elsewhere, and obviously ended up at Aston for a while and realized that wasn't working out and ended up retiring. So like Lewis's eyes have clearly gone looking elsewhere in exactly the same fashion. If Ferrari can't give him something that lets him challenge for wins again, I think not like a direct comparison to Seb's sort of time in Formula One, but there's an element of similarities there that these drivers are like the top of their sport, the top of their entire profession. And if they're not competing for wins, like there is that sort of element of just that disconnection, that loss of interest. Like, I mean, even people like Kimi Raikkonen, like, yeah, fair enough. He had his championship and he had his time in race winning teams and was top tier performance, but there was a notable difference in his time at like Alfa Romeo.
Yeah, look at Alonso. Alonso at McLaren and Alonso at Aston Martin is two different drivers, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Early McLaren, anyway. Towards the end of McLaren, he booked his ideas
perked up a bit.
Yeah.
Early days.
I don't think I'd say there's mistakes necessarily creeping into Lewis's driver.
No,
though.
I think he's still... Yeah.
I think the errors or the issues in his driving you see, I think, are more from the lack of confidence in the car or in the car not doing what he wants it to do than errors in the way he's driving necessarily.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's probably more, you know, you're so used to your car doing certain things and then suddenly it isn't doing them, then that's when mistakes creep in, because you have to adjust a lot of your behavior to match the new behavior of the
car. It's where all Ricardo's struggles came from. Like, a way of driving and a way, you know, having to drive in a way that doesn't feel natural and having to think about it more rather than it just being instinct. And I think that's kind of part of the issue for sure.
Yeah. Next one.
Next one. Simple question from Ben Green. Can Horner survive?
Oh, yeah. Why not? Simple answer. Yes, he can.
I mean, who knows at this point? Like, so the latest on it is that the person who made the accusations against him is disputing the findings, because the Red Bull investigation dismissed the claim. He didn't actually find him guilty or not guilty. He just dismissed the claim.
Yeah, it really annoys me that the media report cleared him all the time.
Yeah,
he wasn't cleared. They dismissed the claim. Yeah. It was never cleared. Yeah.
So yeah, she is disputing that, and she's also asked the FIA for an investigation. Apparently, originally went through the FIA's kind of whistleblowing sort of service, and now an official complaint has been made to the FIA. And I mean, like, Christian Horner and a lot of people at Red Bull keep just sort of saying, oh, you know, we want to draw a line to this and go racing. But, like, he doesn't get to decide that. No,
yeah,
like,
that's not your decision.
Yeah. Sooner or later,
you want what you want would suit you, wouldn't it? It'd be lovely for you.
Exactly.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is going to get worse for Red Bull before it gets better. I don't think that can just keep trying to brush it under the carpet. Exactly.
Well,
how
the media
aren't
having it, are they? That's the thing. No one's.
No, exactly.
It's not going away.
And I think if this does end up, I mean, ultimately I can see this ends up going to an actual court, at which point they can't hide behind things. Everything will be laid out for everyone to see. So
yeah.
I think eventually we will find out. Right now it's still, even like last week, there were like day to day, just like a new rumor that Max is going to leave the team. And the next day, like, no, that was nonsense. Christian Horner's going. And the next day, no, that's nonsense. But Helmut Marko, like every single day there's a new rumor. And it's just like, so tiresome. Boring. Just like, I just want some facts now and actually draw a proper line under it, not the one that people involved are asking for.
And of course, it doesn't help him that they're winning everything. So people are obviously naturally wanting to see that team suffer in some capacity.
Of course,
So, you know, that's another factor, I think. But yeah, that's about all I've got to say about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And that wraps us up for this week. As we said before, a little bit of a shorter one, but it kind of worked out all right. Got a little bit more focus on storylines and some detailed answers for some inbox, so it's worked quite well. If you'd like to follow us on any of the socials, just search Back of the Grid. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and X, formerly known as Twitter, as most people say these days. You can head to the website as well. If you want to reach out and get in touch with us, there is a contact form on there, as well as all the stuff for Predictions League we've already talked about. If you are watching this via YouTube, please remember to like and subscribe. That helps out tons for that platform, with it being a newer thing for us. This is our first full season on there. So
yeah, we had a good episode last week as well.
Yeah, anything. And obviously, as some of you will have seen, you know, we'll respond to comments, stuff like that. We'll take inbox from comments. So don't forget to interact there as well. And then if you want to get involved with the Discord, you probably heard it mentioned fairly often throughout episodes as we talk to chat in there live. If you want to get involved with that, head to patreon.com/backofthegrid, and that will give you all the information on how to get signed up to our Patreon, which then gives you access to the Discord and, you know, other bits and pieces. So yeah, head there for that. That is everything. So go
that's
and enjoy
the admin done.
That is the scripture bit done. So go and enjoy the Australian Grand Prix, and we will see you next week to review it all. Bye everyone.
Bye.
Do a stop.